Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, Chapter 9, The Dark Mark.
May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? We're gonna have a problem here.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the Victors. Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.
Hi, and welcome to The Real Weird Sisters. I'm Martha.
And I'm Alice.
And today we are here to talk about Chapter 9 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Alice, we are recording this in advance, but this is, if all goes as planned, I am back in the United States now.
I hope you're back. I hope all goes as planned, because aren't you supposed to be getting back, like, on Thursday of this previous, or, like, you know, this would be coming out on Monday, and so you should have been back for, like, 5 days by now.
Yeah, Friday, so 4 days. But, yes, okay. Hopefully all has gone according to plan, and I am indeed back in the United States, no longer in Germany. This is a few weeks ahead of time, though, so we don't know. Count on, or knock on wood.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess no jinxing it, but it's exciting that you're should be back in the States at this point, and hopefully all of our recording woes that we've run into will, you know, go away now.
Exactly. And we're definitely excited to be back in the same time zone so we can get more shows out and, you know, keep growing the show as I'm back in the States now.
Yeah.
So, Alice, how did you enjoy this chapter?
I really liked it. I forgot how much we get into stuff. Like, I was thinking, okay, well, they're still at the Quidditch World Cup setting, so It's not going to be that much action. I mean, I kind of had forgotten. I mean, not totally forgotten, but, like, I just wasn't remembering right away that we'd be getting into the whole, like, Mr. Crouch interrogating, or not interrogating, but, like, being all weird with Winky and Mr. Diggory being, like, a total crazy person, and it was just a really interesting chapter, and it set up a lot of stuff for later in the book, so I really liked it. How about you?
Yeah, I thought it was great, too. I think definitely one of the very best we've read so far. It felt like not a return to Hogwarts, obviously, but it definitely felt like a return to actual action and important stuff and lots of really interesting character moments as well, and it was a good length as well. I just thought it was a very enjoyable chapter, although of course it wasn't enjoyable in terms of the content. It was very dark and creepy and lots of bad things happening in it.
Yeah, but that's like the good stuff of Harry Potter.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. So yeah, I thought it was really good. We don't have any listener feedback to talk about right now because we are recording this a little bit in advance, of course. I think we should probably just go ahead and get into the chapter then, huh?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, so the previous chapter ended with Fred and George getting the money from Ludo Bagman. Of course, we don't know yet that it's leprechaun gold, but this next chapter starts with Mr. Weasley saying, not to tell Mrs. Weasley about their gambling, and Fred is like, oh, don't worry, we've got big plans for this money, we don't want it confiscated. This is one of the few light moments of the chapter.
Right, because it says that Mr. Weasley looks, like, a little bit apprehensive, like, because he kind of says it in, like, this, he says it gleefully, but it's almost like a threat or something.
Yes. Fred.
So, yeah, Fred's you could tell Mr. Weasley's, like, just choosing ignorance.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how it goes in the Weasley family a lot, that Mr. Weasley sort of, like, tries to threaten them with Mrs. Weasley, and then everybody else, all the kids just kind of walk all over him, basically, because they know that he doesn't really want to start any kind of conflict.
Yeah, exactly. So, and he's definitely more of, like, the fun parent, for
exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. Good cop and bad cop. He's definitely good cop. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they're back in the crowd. They're back to their campsite, and everybody's celebrating at their camps because it's they're in the Ireland section. It says that leprechauns kept shooting over their heads, cackling and waving their lanterns. So then they decide to have one last cup of cocoa to talk about the match before turning in. This is kind of the conversation that I'm glad that we don't really have to hear the conversation that they have, because it just is kind of we kind of get the secondhand dialogue about how Mr. Weasley and Charlie are arguing about cobbing, and then Ginny falls asleep right at the table, so then they have to go to bed.
Yeah, I think I would fall asleep at the table, too.
Yeah, exactly. Cobbing, of course, is excessive use of elbows, so I don't think that conversation would be too interesting to me.
No, not too riveting at all.
No. So then everybody goes to bed. Hermione and Ginny go back to, like, their little palace. Well, the other eight have to be in bunk beds in this other tent.
Yeah,
so they can still hear, like, everybody's still celebrating outside, but they start to drift into sleep. Of course, Harry has these, like, he's fantasizing about playing Quidditch for England and trying out the Ronski feint. So he says he doesn't know whether he actually fell asleep or not, but he's been just thinking about flying like Crumb.
There's been a lot of discussion about, like, sleep and stuff. I feel like in the last, we've talked about dreams and we've talked about, like, sleep schedules. but I feel like this is another, like, sleep thing that I can totally relate to. Like, the feeling of, like, where you keep on kind of waking up a lot, but you are not even sure if you've been asleep. But this weird, like, half stage. Yeah, so another, like, relatable moment.
Totally. I definitely have had moments like that, especially after an exciting day like Harry's just had. And then especially being woken up so abruptly as well in the middle of the night still. So yeah, like I said, they get woken up in the middle of the night. Mr. Weasley's shouting that they need to get up and it's urgent. And says Harry sat up quickly and the top of his head hit canvas. And it says, dimly he could tell that something was wrong. He knew immediately, Alice.
Yeah, but he doesn't know what's going on. No. And I want to make sure we get to the point later in the chapter, I'll point out something where he does not know immediately.
Yes, I think I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, no, Harry, like, clearly the atmosphere has changed. I think he was slightly asleep.
Oh,
in order
I think
to
so.
Like not notice the shift.
Right.
But it says the singing stops and he can hear people screaming. Like, it sounds very creepy.
Yeah, it
but
does.
I've always kind of wondered, like, what was the point of waking them all up and making them run to the forest?
I know. I mean, I don't really understand because they basically run straight into the riot, right?
Yeah, I think so. Like, they exit the tent right into, like, everybody rioting, and then they're all, like, running toward the forest. I mean, I guess maybe Mr. Weasley was afraid that, like, maybe they would start, like, burning down tents or something like that.
That's what I was going to guess, because I think that the like, levitation of the Roberts family is happening right outside their tent, so they're pretty close to something that's happening, so I guess he's worried that it's going to spread, so that he wants them to, like, run to shelter, but I feel like the better course of action would be for them to just all leave, like, do Sidealong Apparition back to the Burrow. I mean, we've talked about that. I don't think J.K. Rowling come up with Sidealong Apparition at this point, so maybe
yeah, what's keeping them there, though, like...
I mean, I guess Mr. Weasley has to work, but I think that having a family, like, with a bunch of underage wizards, he would have a good enough excuse to be able to go home, or maybe, like, take them home and then go back and work for the mystery there.
He could just apparate. I mean, they can each go with one of the boys that's old enough.
Right.
And then a couple of them have to take two trips, and then Mr. Weasley just stays when he comes back.
Right. I just feel like this is very, I mean... While I'm questioning it, I do understand that it's a really stressful situation. It's hard to, like, think rationally in the moment. You just kind of want to get away from what's going on. But I don't know. I feel like they could have had a better course of action.
I'm surprised that nobody really seemed to do that. Like, everybody's running to the forest.
I know. And I feel like, I mean, I guess the stuff is happening technically in the campsite, and they are trying to go to the woods to get away from it. But then, of course, the dark mark appears in the woods, so that's actually a scarier place to be. But, yeah, I mean, it's the middle of the night, it's dark, there's a bunch of people rioting. I would not want to leave shelter. I guess, I don't know, I guess it is really close to what's happening, so I can understand a bit, but...
Right. But, yeah, so Mr. Weasley just tells them, basically, to run toward the forest, and they're going to split up, too. That's another questionable decision.
Right. Yeah, he's like, we've got to go play. We've got to go work for the ministry.
Like, all of the adults.
Yes.
It's not even, like, one of them stays with them.
You'd think that, like, Charlie or something could stay with them since he doesn't actually even work for the ministry. Or Bill, even. It's just Percy and Mr. Weasley who are actually ministry employees.
Yeah, well, and Charlie would have such a broad, good-natured face that he would calm everyone down.
Exactly. He would just be smiling along, so everybody would feel a lot less stressed. But yeah, they go and the four adults disapparate, so it's just Fred, George, Ginny, Harry, Ron, and Hermione, and then those two groups of three get separated from each other soon as well. So it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, it really is.
And so, yeah, this image when they get out of the tent is really very, very sad and scary. Seeing the four members of the Roberts family being levitated in the air, and they're like getting played, like they're just basically like the one kid is spinning like a top, and then
Oh, it's horrible.
the mom is like getting flipped upside down, and like her dress is falling off and stuff. It's just really awful.
I mean, and clearly this is supposed to be like a KKK type
Right.
reference with them all wearing masks and it being like in the middle of the night. It's like, but I mean, it's very horrible. It's definitely like feels like some sort of a lynching or something.
Definitely with their hoods as well. I mean, it's definitely a parallel to the KKK and other hate groups, but especially it reminds me of stuff like that. So, but yeah, I mean, it's just horrible to read. I mean, it goes on for a while, especially Harry realizing who the four people are, that it's Mr. Roberts and his family, and the kid is like really, really young. I don't know, it's just really hard to read, I think.
Yeah, I don't enjoy it at all, obviously. It's just depressing, and I mean, I'm kind of just, I don't know. It's almost like weird that we do get to see this in so much detail because I feel like it's so violent. Like, this is really like one of the first, and I mean, I guess it's this is the turning point in the series, but this is one of the first times we really see this like horrible behavior in person. Like, before everything we've seen, or it's all been like sort of secondhand, or we've just heard about how Death Eaters have done horrible things, or and this is the first time that Harry is really witnessing. I mean, I guess because before, really, what have we had? We've had the Chamber of Secrets being opened. That was kind of different though, because that was like a monster doing it, not actual people.
Yeah, and it's much easier, I think, for kids to have it be a monster who's the villain, something that's not human, something that's not at all like them. But seeing all these people who are really just the same as Harry and as the reader as well, they're people. That makes it so much more difficult and so much darker, I think, to read and to witness.
Yeah, for sure. So I do think this is another sign that the books are changing. And I mean, we're going to get into that. Harry's going to learn a lot about Voldemort's followers in this chapter. Like, he didn't even know the word Death Eater until this chapter. So
Let's
we
see.
didn't either, you know,
Yeah,
technically, the readers
exactly.
didn't.
Yeah, I think in the movie, in the movies, they we learn it earlier because I think it's Dean Thomas doesn't know what Death Eaters are, right? Something like that.
Oh, like in the third movie or
Yeah,
what?
I think it is in the third movie
Yeah.
that.
I don't remember specifically, but that could definitely be with Sirius and
Yeah,
everything.
exactly. This is funny that we're talking about how this is really the turning point in terms of the darkness of the books, because I was talking to my friend the other day who's not a big Harry Potter fan, and I asked him what his favorite one was, and he was like, "Oh, well, definitely not the third one. That's so scary with those wolves." He was like, "It's the scariest one for sure." And I was like, "No, that's actually like probably the lightest one."
The third one is like the least scary
Because
because,
Voldemort's not in it at all. He
yeah.
was like, "Whatever the one with the wolves is." Yeah,
Like, you mean Twilight?
exactly. Yeah, we did get some people commenting on our comments about Twilight from a few chapters ago. I remarked that I was Team Jacob, but apparently I'm not supposed to be.
I don't know. I still think it's okay.
Well, I did admit that I'm not a Twilight fan at all, so it was completely superficial, and I just thought that Taylor Lautner was better looking than Robert Pattinson, so that's why I was Team Jacob.
Yeah, well, it's a fair reason.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, back to this. It's definitely hard to read, like I said, and especially knowing that it's these two little kids. I did want to say I forgot that actually it does say that tents are getting blown up. Like some of the marchers are blasting tents out of the way, and several of the tents caught fire, it says. So I can see why they actually do leave the tents.
Yeah, that's true. So I think that was a fair idea. Again, though, I do think where they kind of
Where they
were a
end up
little weird
going.
was not, was not to have an adult with them, but
yeah,
okay, whatever.
Well, and also, like, go to the dark woods. It's just like in Pretty Little Liars, we always say, like, why did you go to the woods?
Like, yeah, I know, they always go to the woods, and you're like...
You could have gone anywhere else, and you just had to go to the darkest and sketchiest place ever. I mean, it gets good to get out of the riot, but I think that they could have gone a different direction, maybe. I know they're in this abandoned moor, but still...
Yeah.
Yeah, so Harry, Ron, and Hermione are really just, like, the four Pretty Little Liars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which one would be which, but...
Yeah, maybe that's for a special topics show sometime.
I think so, definitely. That would be a long time coming, because I think we've been talking about that for a while as well.
We have, yeah.
But yeah, so like I said, the two groups of three, Fred, George, and Ginny, and then Harry, Ron, and Hermione, get separated almost immediately, because Ron... trips over a tree root. With feet that size, it's hard not to.
Yeah. Yeah, poor Ron. I mean, kind of typical, I guess, but whatever. You'd think that they could, you know, still get in touch with the others, but...
No, I guess. How did Fred, George, and Ginny not hear him yell with pain? They just decide, they're like, oh, that was Ron. Well, Harry and Hermione will take care of him. We've got to go protect Ginny.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you alluded to this with Draco, but here's Draco again with his amazing wit.
I think this one's actually pretty funny, like, especially because he, like, pops out of nowhere just to have that zinger.
Yeah,
I think
that's
it
true.
Works really well. I think sometimes, like, obviously the, like, oh, you have big feet, that's, like, kind of an obvious joke, but I think, like, because they don't know he's there and he just, like, decides to... appear with that burn, it works pretty well, I think.
Yeah, that was pretty good, actually.
It is weird to see Malfoy alone. I think this is one of the few times, or one of the first times we've seen Malfoy, like, as a villain without Crabbe and Goyle with him.
Right, or at least with his, you know, dad or his parents. Like, he's,
right.
You're right, he's never really been, like, fully alone before, but I guess, I always kind of picture him, like, if he's by himself, he's not going to be nearly as, like, bold.
Yeah,
but I think, like, in this scene, it kind of, he's, like, also kind of coming into his own with his like evil side.
I think so. I think he's, like, feels really in power right now because of, I mean, do you think he knows that his parents are out there?
I do think and I don't know if Narcissa like,
that's fair,
masked or whatever, but why wouldn't she be with him if she's not?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, she was definitely at the World Cup, so she's been in that location. So if she's not with Lucius under the masks, then why isn't she with Draco? That's a good question.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, I don't know. I think he does know that because they don't seem like, I mean, I don't think that for them, that's not something that they're ashamed of.
No.
They're happy. They're proud that they're doing that.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that they told Malfoy, like, this is what we're doing.
Right. I mean, I think, like, the characterization of Narcissa would maybe make me think that she would maybe want to hide that from Draco because he's too young to be, like, part of that. But I think definitely Lucius would not be ashamed of that behavior and, like, or like, want to keep it a secret from his son.
No, they would, like, want to teach Draco from a young age that this is, like, what they want to do to Muggles.
Right, which is super messed up, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, Draco, it says he's looking utterly relaxed, which is a creepy image, of course.
Mm-hmm, it is. And how he's kind of just, like, chilling in the woods, just, like, waiting to see what happens.
Right, and he's, like, telling them.
Another reason, though, why I think he does know, because, like, then he wouldn't be scared of, like, the people in masks. He knows who they are.
Yeah, that's true. They're all his...
And he knows they're not going to hurt him.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, he also knows they're not going to hurt him because he's not a mudblood.
Right. Language, please, Martha.
I know. I'm sorry. Everybody present knows that mudblood is a very offensive term for a witch or wizard of Muggle parentage.
Yeah. I like how it says that.
Yeah.
To clue in the reader, but then... make it clear, like, Harry didn't have to be like, what's a mudblood?
Harry's like, Harry was confused. He did not know.
Harry remembered immediately.
Yeah, he does remember immediately that mudblood is a very offensive term for witch or wizard of Muggle parentage. But Ron is being, I mean, not Ron, Malfoy is being very awful here, saying, like, that Muggle, or that because the people in masks are going after Muggles, like, Hermione's in danger. He's not just, like, he's saying like, oh, you better hide, which like could be like maybe interpreted as like, oh, you're in danger, so we want you to be safe. But then he's like, oh, if you do want to be showing off your knickers in midair, hang around. They're moving this way, and it would give us all a laugh. Like, okay, sicko.
Yeah. He's so terrible.
Really awful. Ron's really defensive of Hermione here, which is a good side of Ron that we see.
Yeah, I think it is really interesting with Ron's characterization. We talked a little bit last week about how he, like, will buy into some of the societal stereotypes about house elves and some other magical creatures, but it's just very interesting that he has that side to him, but then at the same time is very defensive of Muggleborns and
yes.
Hermione and stuff. So I think I really like that. Like, I mean, I don't think that's a good trait in him about the elves or anything, obviously.
Right.
But I think, like, I really like that he's more complicated. He's not just like, it's not just black and white to him. Like, he mm-hmm. has certain, I don't know. It's just, it's very interesting as far as characterization goes. And
yeah.
I do think it's realistic.
And I think it comes from him, like, although he is, it's always reminded that the Weasleys are a very poor family. He is privileged in the sense that he's grown up in a wizarding family, a pureblood family.
Oh, yes.
So it's kind of a different kind of privilege because he's obviously not privileged in terms of wealth, but he has a wealth of knowledge of the wizarding world. He's known about it for his whole life, and he's been part of it, and of course he is pureblood. So I think that it's kind of a relatable person. Like, everybody, I think a lot of people know somebody like this who's had it a little bit easier than most people, and he understands some things that minorities go through, but not all of them. So I think
mm-hmm.
I think that that's a really interesting side of Ron.
Definitely, and that was, you said that really well, like, that he understands some things, but he has a lot of learning to do.
Definitely. And so, yeah, Malfoy also has a lot of learning to do, but
yeah, no kidding.
He's just like chuckling around, and like he hears people screaming, and he chuckles, and he tells them, or he asks why or what Mr. Weasley's doing, and then Harry asks, "Oh, are your parents out there wearing masks?" And Malfoy's just like, "Oh, well, if they were, I wouldn't be likely to tell you, would I, Potter?" So then they.
Clever.
Yeah, they take off.
So pretty much he just said yes, they
yeah,
are.
He really did. And yeah, so Hermione is the one, of course, who gets them to leave. I'm surprised she doesn't punch Malfoy.
Yeah, I think she realizes this is not like a situation where she needs to be like putting herself out there any more than she already has.
Right. Now, do you think that his words have scared her at all? I mean, I know that we see Ron and Harry get more nervous the closer they get to everything, like worrying about Hermione being muggle-born. Do you think Hermione also feels nervous because of it, or has she just brushed those words off?
I'm sure she does feel more nervous. I think she's trying as a coping mechanism to be brave, you know,
mm-hmm.
and just, like, maybe not focus on that so much, but
yeah.
I'm sure that must, like,
yeah,
alert her to the fact that she, you know, really does need to be on
right.
edge.
If she wasn't already on edge.
I'm sure she
alert.
Already was.
Yeah,
but.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, I think Malfoy's words probably just confirmed exactly what her maybe trepidations were. I mean, I don't think that she's, like, terrified, and maybe not even to the same point that Ron is, because Ron is, like, very clearly very worried for her later on and
mm-hmm.
now. But I think she definitely, in her head at least, is... understands the gravity of the situation.
Yes, for sure.
Especially knowing that Lucius knows that she's a muggle-born, and Lucius probably is one of the people under the masks.
Yeah, that's scary. I mean, and really, that's a good point. I didn't even really think about that. Like, because the thing is, you can't look at a muggle, you can't look at wizards or witches and know who's muggle-born just by looking.
Right.
But when you have people with insider knowledge, like, that actually should freak her out way more, just knowing that, like, Lucius probably is one of the people under the masks.
Right, and he very clearly knows that she's muggle-born. I mean, we had the chapter before when he meets her, and he, like, gives her a really scathing look, and it's clear that he knows that she's muggle-born, and he hates muggle-borns. So that would be
yeah.
probably my greatest fear, knowing that... I mean, basically, Malfoy has just confirmed that, yes, his father is out there, one of the rioters.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
That's really scary.
It is.
Then we have kind of a this is a little bit goofy of a scene compared, I mean, not compare, not like actually goofy, but compared to the rest of this chapter. They run into a huddle of teenagers in pajamas who are arguing vociferously. And this girl with thick curly hair turns and says, "Should I try my best French, Alice?"
Yeah, do it. I don't think it's going to be good, but...
I did this in Google Translate earlier to, like, hear how it's supposed to sound, but I don't think the Google Translate recording actually sounded like a person would be the way that a person would say it, so I'll just do my impression of the Google Translate version. Où est Madame Maxime? Nous l'avons perdu.
And what does that mean, Martha, for those of us who don't speak French?
It translates
And for those of us who do speak French but couldn't understand that?
Yeah, so basically for everybody. It translates to, "Where is Madame Maxime? We lost her."
Which is just, like, the silliest thing because, like, what, do all the Beaubaton students just, like, travel with Madame Maxime?
Yeah.
Like, they can't go anywhere with, like, their families? Like, it would be the same as if, like, Harry, Ron, and Hermione were like, "Where is Dumbledore?"
It's pretty dumb. We were talking about this beforehand. It's definitely a very shoehorned scene. Like, okay, we learned a couple chapters ago there are wizarding schools in other countries. And I think we saw the Beaubaton crowd a little bit earlier as well. We didn't get the name of the school, but we heard some people speaking French. But it's like, now we know that Madame Maxime is somebody associated with Beaubaton.
Like, it's kind of like when she drops in Sirius Black or the Love Goods and stuff like that, except for it's just like, wait, it's not that exciting, though, because it's in the same exact book that we're going to learn about Madame Maxime, so it's not impressive at all.
No, and also it doesn't make sense completely. Like, why are they traveling with Madame Maxime? Or, I mean, maybe they're looking for her because they were in the same camp with her, maybe, and then she's gone.
I don't know. Well... she shouldn't be hard to spot. She has big bones.
She has very big bones. So,
but here's the thing. This actually is making me wonder, though. Like, I'm kind of confused why we didn't see Dumbledore at the Quidditch match. Like,
yeah, that is a good question.
Like, why didn't
see
he
any
go to
professors?
That?
You'd think that McGonagall obviously would be there. She loves Quidditch.
I guess there's
Quidditch.
So many people there. There are 100,000 people.
Yeah.
So that's maybe
true.
They're just. In different crowds, but I feel like Dumbledore would have been in the top box.
Yeah, I mean, or at least somewhere. Like, I don't know. I think he likes Quidditch, and he would want to be there to like associate with other wizards of other places. Maybe it's because he's too busy planning the Triwizard Tournament.
Yeah, you'd think they'd want him there though, in case somebody fell off their broom and he could shout, "Arresto Momento!"
Yes, he's the only one who can do that. Because he's the only one who knows that fake spell. But, yeah, it does... Actually, having this conversation about Madame Maxime is making me a little bit confused. Actually, where did she go? Like, why... I know we're not really supposed
maybe
to...
Maybe she apparated away.
Yeah, maybe. It's just... she just left all her students that
well,
she
wait,
was traveling
can
with.
Well, wait, can she apparate? Because can Hagrid apparate with his giant blood?
I don't think he can, but I don't know if that's because of his giant blood or because he never learned, you know, because he only went through third year or whatever.
It didn't stop him from becoming a professor.
Yeah, a quote-unquote professor. Madame Maxime, though, like, maybe we're not supposed to read that much into this scene because it's obviously just there to, like, remind, or, like, not remind us, but, like, have a little bit of foreshadowing and, like, clue us in so that we've heard her name before we actually meet her. But, like, why isn't she there? Like, is it something we're supposed to, like, you know, we know that she kind of likes to distance herself from taking sides in terms of, like, this, like, admitting to her giant parentage or, I don't know.
Yeah, she's probably hiding somewhere. She's probably scared.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, it could be a character moment because we are learning that she is putting herself in front of her students that she that she sponsored a field trip with.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, so then this is the first time that we see a French girl speaking to Ron and Ron having no idea what's going on. He says, "What?" And she's like, "Oh." And then they distinctly hear her say, "Hogwarts." And Hermione's like, "Beaubaton." Yeah, it's let's just make sure we are clear. And I know that you know this, and I know that most Harry Potter fans know this, but in the movies, Beauxbatons is a girls' school, and that is not at all true in the book.
Right, we have plenty of character, like male and female characters from Beauxbatons, and from Durmstrang we have plenty of male and female characters.
Right. Neither of the in the movie, Beauxbatons is a girls' school and Durmstrang is a boys' school, and that's not the case in the book at all,
It
which
just wouldn't make sense because
no.
these are international schools.
That's
They're like as big as Hogwarts. They take
right.
all the people from that area.
So there'd have to
So
be
like,
a girls' school and a boys' school in France and Eastern Europe respectively, as well. And there's I mean, these are the three major European wizarding schools. So obviously there's not like they don't just like boys are more important in Eastern Europe and girls are more important in France. That's not the case. So or there's it's only witches in France. There's no wizards in France.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean like I can't actually think of any Durmstrang girls. I'm sure that there are some, but like definitely we have Beauxbatons boys who dance with the Patil twins at the Yule Ball. So anyway, just wanted to make that clear. And also, it seems like it's not just girls who are looking for Madame Maxime. It's a huddle of teenagers, not just a huddle of girls.
Oh, okay, so she didn't just bring a group of girls from that she sponsored a field trip
No.
and then
Yeah.
ran off to hide
Yeah, she was
herself.
like, I'll take my favorite female students with me on this field trip, and then I'll just leave them when the riot happens. Like, that doesn't make sense. Anyway, so they go to look for Fred and George, and Hermione, we forgot to mention, pulled out her wand earlier and lit it, even though she's underage. I think she probably knows that it's not a big deal to do that. Maybe she doesn't know completely what the rules are, but I think she
She
probably
said, Lumos Maxima.
No, she just does Lumos because Lumos Maxima is not a real spell.
Well, also Lumos Maxima would probably light up like the whole wood.
Right, yeah, knowing what it does in the third movie, it would definitely be a little bit too distracting for everybody. It would call a lot of attention to them. But yeah, so Ron lights his wand as well, and Harry starts to look for his own wand, but then he realizes he doesn't have it.
Yeah, so obviously this is a small bit of, I mean, quick foreshadowing for what we're going to see at the end of the chapter where Harry's wand has been picked up by someone else.
Right, and this is a little bit odd because both Ron and Hermione have theories. Ron says maybe that he left it in the tent, and Hermione says maybe it fell out of his pocket when they were running. Both are decent theories, and Harry's really confused because it says he usually kept his wand with him at all times in the wizarding world, and finding himself without it in the midst of a scene like this made him feel very vulnerable. Well, we know that he's been without his wand for several hours now, and so it's kind of, I mean, well, I do, I mean, I'm pointing this out, but I also can relate to it, like it. When you lose something that you always have with you, you don't necessarily always realize right away. But I don't know. It's kind of funny to think that he's talking. He's like, I'm surprised I didn't notice I'd lost it because he has been missing it for several hours.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think he would have at least noticed when Mr. Weasley told him, like, hurry up, there's danger outside. Like,
Yeah.
you'd think like he would have checked before he left the tent, but
Right. Now I do lose things on a like fairly regular basis. I've never actually lost anything like super important, like essential to daily life or like my wallet or anything like that, knock on wood. But I do think that it is kind of if I were to lose my wallet, I would think that I would notice right away.
maybe not though, like if you just had it in your purse and like somebody took it out of your purse or something and then
Right.
you came home, just put your purse down, I feel like you could go like all evening or,
Right. Now, the only thing that I ever did lose was my two of my favorite stuffed animals when I was like 7 or 8, maybe. Was I about that age, do you think?
yeah, I think about that.
Yeah, and their names were Otto and Reggie, and they were these two little dogs that were like the size of
Like they were like small beanie babies.
yeah, they were not actually Beanie Babies. They were a different like knockoff brand,
They
but
were a knockoff, but
yeah,
yeah.
but they were not the normal size of Beanie Babies. They were like a little bit bigger than the teeny like the beanie babies or something. Whatever the teeny
beanies. No, they weren't like beanies. The size of the Happy Meal beanie babies. They were just like a little bit smaller than regular beanie babies.
Yeah, but so there was these two little dogs.
Silly doesn't matter to the story.
No, but they were two of my very favorite stuffed animals, and I had a lot of stuffed animals because that was my favorite demographic of toys when I was at that age. And I lost them, and I just could not figure out where they had gone, and they were gone, and I was so sad about it. They were gone for probably 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah.
And then one day...
At least three or four years. I'm just laughing because I know the punchline of this.
Yes. And so then one day, I think I was probably 10 or 11, because it was when I was sort of cleaning through my room and, like, downsizing the number of stuffed animals that I had, and I had this, like, big... one of those nets that hung above my bed that had a bunch of stuffed animals in it. And one of the animals that was in it, it was funny because that net was used for the animals that I didn't really play with ever, because all the ones that I played with were either on my floor or in my bed. So the ones that were in that net were hardly ever played with. And one of those things was this like stuffed Hedwig backpack, which was actually, like, now that I'm looking back on it, like, it was actually really cool, and I wish that I'd kept it, but...
Yeah, it was so stupid that you got rid of it.
I know. I wasn't really a Harry Potter fan, because because I must have been... I don't think I was 10 yet, because I was 9 when I first read Harry Potter, so I would have wanted to hold on to it at that point. So it was probably right before I got into Harry Potter that I'd had this Hedwig backpack, and I never really liked it because I wasn't a Harry Potter fan yet. And so I'd never played with it either because it was really stiff and, like, not,
it was a backpack. It wasn't a stuffed animal.
But it was a stuffed animal, though. Like, yeah. It was a stuffed animal backpack. And it was, you couldn't put very much in it. It was, like, it had straps for a backpack, but it wasn't, like, a functional backpack. You could just put a few things in it. And, like, it was about the size of two small Beanie Babies, like, that you could, the pouch in it was about that size. And the reason I say that is because when I took the Hedwig backpack down and I was ready to take it to the thrift store or wherever we were donating it, I unzipped it just to check that there wasn't anything in it. And there were Otto and Reggie just sitting in there. And they'd been gone for so long, several years. And I'd, like, I think I had a funeral for them and stuff, too, because I was so sad. But it was, like, the return of the prodigal sons. Or the prodigal sons, not the sons. I can't say that. Prodigal sons. I was so happy that they returned, and I do actually remember now why they were in the backpack, is that they went on this journey together in the backpack, and they, like, flew to the moon, which was the net, and then I, like, went to bed or something and had forgotten that they did that, and I woke up the next day and they were gone. But
okay,
that's the most important thing I've ever lost. I guess I'm lucky that I've never lost my wand.
Yeah, I was like, as you were telling this very long, elaborate story, I was like starting to wonder, like, how did we get on this subject?
I know, I was too. I was thinking, like, we're talking about, like, a really dark and creepy chapter. Where did we start talking about my stuffed animals? But Alice, have you ever lost anything important?
Well, I lost an iPod in high school.
Really?
And you remember this.
Oh, your iPod Shuffle.
It was my iPod Shuffle, or actually... Yeah, it was my senior year of high school, and I had this iPod Shuffle. It was the very first generation of iPod Shuffle that was, like, a long stick, but, like, skinny.
White,
and
right.
It was white. And we were driving to Thanksgiving at our cousin's house, and we got out of the car, and I think it must have been sitting on my lap or something, and it fell out of... I don't know exactly how it happened,
but it was, like, the size of your finger. It was so small.
Fell out of the car, and it was dark out when we got there, so I didn't notice. And, like, it was so light that I didn't hear it, you know, or anything. So, and then I didn't notice. This is kind of like Harry. I mean, I always had my iPod at that point, and I didn't notice until the next morning. I think I noticed that night, but I thought it was just out in the car.
Yeah.
But then it snowed that night, and so then I couldn't find it. But I didn't, like, figure out that I had dropped it there.
Yeah.
But then eventually my cousin's, in the spring when the snow melted, they found the iPod in their front yard, and it was, like, run over by a car.
Oh, I forgot that they actually found it.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, man. Well, that's kind of actually, maybe, I was going to say, I forgot that they'd found it, but I was going to say that maybe a house elf found it and picked it up. But that would
That
be
wouldn't be
violate
illegal, though.
that would be violating Clause 3 of the whatever. The Code of Wand Use. But yeah, that's an important thing to lose, I guess. You got a nano after that, I guess, right?
I did, yeah.
So,
Upgraded, but
yeah.
it was still sad.
That is sad. Anyway, Harry's lost his wand, and they are kind of, they don't have too much time to think about it because they immediately see Winky. And this is, I forgot how like on the nose this sentence is about the way that she's moving. Like, it's very like, if you knew what was happening, or if you were reading this closely, you could figure out the entire plot of the book, possibly. It says Winky was moving in a most peculiar fashion, apparently with great difficulty. It was as though someone invisible were trying to hold her back. Well, that's exactly what's happening.
Harry did not know immediately. This is not what I was going to say, but Harry did not immediately connect the dots on this one.
No, I don't think anybody would. It's he his theory is actually like exactly what I would have thought. Like a very I mean, it's a good theory. He says he's sure that he just had to punish herself because she didn't ask permission to hide, which
Right, which
makes
is, I think, why
sense.
this doesn't raise any suspicions with readers.
Right, and it makes sense because later on we do know that she wasn't supposed to leave the tent either, so she would have had to punish herself according to the Winky that we know. So it makes sense, and we just don't, it doesn't raise any eyebrows. But J.K. Rowling literally says someone invisible was trying to hold her back, and that's exactly what's happening,
I
which
know,
is
it's
funny.
crazy.
Yeah, and then Hermione starts being indignant about house elves again. She's this is what makes me think that she's really not that concerned about the riots or her place in the riot.
Just the fact that she's going off about the house
Right,
elves.
she's like talking really loudly about like how house elves are slaves, and she's really mad about how nobody's doing anything about the situation of elves. And Ron's like talking back to her about like, well, the elves are happy, and then Hermione's like, it's people like you, Ron.
I
And
know, which I love that line because it's
yeah, I
very
do
true.
too.
Like, and I mean, really good for, well, not foreshadowing, but good characterization, like, of Hermione starting to get this activist side to her.
Yeah, and also just kind of how Ron is going to react to her activist side in the future as well. But then she's just like starting this big rant, and Ron's like, okay, we should probably leave, because both Harry and Ron are kind of thinking that there might have been truth in what Malfoy said, and Hermione might be in more danger than the two of them are. But so
Right.
that's what makes me think like Hermione doesn't seem concerned at all. Like she's
Well, yeah,
totally
I do think
distracted
it's more
by.
of a sort of a coping
Yeah,
mechanism.
okay, that's fair. And also, I mean, it is in character with Hermione for her to be putting the needs of others before herself as well. I mean, maybe in the back of her
Exactly,
mind
yeah.
she's nervous about her own place in this, but she's still very passionate about the
Well, and
unjust system.
I kind of see it how like Harry would be. Like he would be a lot more concerned about Hermione than himself, even though he really should be kind of freaked out too, because I mean he's the chosen, I mean he's the boy who lived. Like this is Death Eaters, like wouldn't they want to get him?
Right, that's a good point. I mean, it's not only just Hermione who's thinking about others in this point. At this point, Harry's also thinking about Hermione over himself. I mean, of course, Ron's also thinking of Hermione over himself, but Ron doesn't really have that much to fear. I mean, he's a blood traitor or whatever, but he's definitely in the least danger of the three of them, I would say.
No, I just think like Hermione and Harry share this characteristic of like being more concerned for others' safety than their own.
Definitely. So yeah, that's probably part of why Hermione's talking about house elves right now. But so they do go deeper into the wood. They're looking for Fred, George, and Ginny, but not like really looking for them. It says that they pass a group of goblins cackling over a sack of gold that they had undoubtedly won betting on the match. So that's foreshadowing for later on as well. And it also says that they seemed quite unperturbed by the trouble at the campsite.
As usual, goblins do not care.
Right. And then they see this another goofy-ish scene with the three tall, beautiful Vila standing in a clearing, and then they're surrounded by a gaggle of young wizards, all of whom are talking very loudly.
Yeah, the Vila are just there, like distracting people from what's going on,
Right.
but not in a good way. And it is, like you said, it's a pretty goofy scene. Like, it's not my favorite, but it's kind of funny. I mean, we have Stan Shunpike, another great classic moment of him where he's trying to show off for the Vila.
Right.
And he says, did I tell you, or no, wait, sorry. He says, I'm about to become the youngest ever minister of magic.
It says his pimples were visible even by the dim silvery light of the Vila. Like, oh, I don't
poor
like.
Poor pimply boy.
I know. He's like 20, right? Like, you'd think
gotta be at least.
You'd think that those would start to fade by this point, but maybe he doesn't wash his face. So then Harry recognizes Stan Shunpike, and he's about to tell Ron, but then he notices that Ron's face has gone oddly slack, and then Ron's like, did I tell you I've invented a broomstick that'll reach Jupiter?
Oh, so funny.
It is pretty funny. That's probably the funniest part of the scene for me, is Ron, like, Harry not being affected by the Vila, and Ron being extremely affected by them.
Yeah.
And then Hermione, of course, being honestly... Typical yes. Hermione.
Yeah, she's so frustrated with them at this point.
Right. So then they get into the very heart of the wood, it says, and they decide to just wait there. And then, of course, right as soon as he says that, Ludo Bagman pops out of nowhere. And this is another suspicious Bagman scene. There's a lot of...
Yeah.
Like we mentioned last chapter or the chapter before, like, he's definitely a red herring throughout the book, and we get that early on.
Yeah, he's definitely, that's the main reason he's here right now, for us readers. Like, what it works out to, he actually is, like, on the run from the goblins already, right?
Yeah, I think so, because it says he no longer looked buoyant and rosy-faced. There was no more spring in his step. He looked very white and strained. But he doesn't know about the riot yet. So I would think that it is because he's already had, or maybe he's just, maybe he hasn't even talked to the goblins yet, but he's stressed out because he just gave a bunch of fake gold to everybody who he's lost bets to.
I think later on we learn that something about the goblins during this.
Oh, really?
I think it has to do with it. I can't remember for certain, but anyway, that's my theory.
Okay, well, that makes sense. I mean, but we do know for sure that he has just lost, allegedly, a ton of money, mm-hmm. and it's been fake gold, so he might, unless you're remembering right, which is definitely possible, he also could just be stressed out about the fact that he just lied to so many people, and he knows that there's going to be consequences to pay later on.
Right, totally. So he's not doing well.
Right, and he's like, what's going on? What are you doing in here all alone? And Ron's like, well, there's sort of a riot going on. And Bagman doesn't know what he's talking about at all.
Right, and again, it just seems suspicious. He plays the role of, like, how Snape is in the first book.
Yeah, definitely.
And, how Percy is in the second book.
Mm-hmm.
And do we have someone in the third book who's, like, the suspect?
Well, Lupin a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with letting Sirius into the castle and that kind of thing. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's definitely, it's good. I mean, Snape is always kind of a little bit of the red herring, but mm-hmm. he's not really in this book at all. Is he?
Yeah. I mean, no, not...
Like, we see him talking to Karkaroff that one time, but that's more to show that Karkaroff is suspicious than Snape is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then they just decide to sit down in this clearing because they're not worried. I don't know, I think this is kind of a weird scene. Ron takes out his model of Crumb. Even though they didn't have time to get dressed, Ron had time to grab that before they left.
He keeps it on him all times, right. Like Harry keeps his wand.
Exactly. He puts it on the ground and watches it walk around. I don't really know why he did that, but maybe it's like a totem or something that calms him down.
This is like a scene where you're reminded that they are definitely kids still.
Yes, it is. It does kind of remind me of Inception, though, like having an object that like shows you you're still awake or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Rod puts his miniature Crumb on the ground, and that like helps him feel calmer or something.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're just talking about the riot. Harry's kind of hoping that Arthur is going to catch Malfoy, or Lucius Malfoy, which is, you know, wishful thinking.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great, but no, not going to happen.
Ron's like, that'd wipe the smirk off of old Draco's face, all right. Like,
yeah, no kidding.
Obviously. Yeah, and then Hermione's worried about the muggles. Ron's being nice, I guess. He's telling them that the ministry will help. They're just talking, and then all of a sudden it's they hear these footsteps or uneven steps, which is again like very after hearing about the invisible person holding Winky back and the uneven steps of her, we hear uneven steps again. And then Harry's like, "Hello, anybody there?" And then all of a sudden we hear, "Miss Mordra."
That was good, Martha.
Thank you. In the movie, Harry. In the movie, Harry's by himself when this happens. He like trips or something, and everybody leaves him. And he actually sees Barty Crouch, Jr. Not knowing who it is. He sees the body of that person and sees somebody cast the spell and then run away. Which is not. I don't have as much of a problem with him seeing somebody as I do with the fact that he gets away, because it's like, I mean, I guess it's to see that Winky is not part of it at all, but I don't know.
Right.
It doesn't.
Yeah. Doesn't it's different just because without much, Winky, but it makes it hard to.
And the other thing that is a little bit, it's kind of like dumbing it down for the movie viewers, is that we have already seen Barty Crouch Jr.'s face because he was present at the Riddle House scene. And then we see his face here as well. Harry doesn't, but we as the audience see it. So we know that it's this person. We don't know who he is, which is still adds to the suspense, and like finding out that he is Barty Crouch's son is still a good reveal in the movie. But like we've known that there's this Death Eater lurking about, this unnamed Death Eater with this face. Just thought I'd mention the differences in the movie and the book.
Yeah, that is true. I forgot how different it is, but I prefer the way the book handles it. Right. It's a lot more interesting to have no idea who set off the Dark Mark and then have it revealed way later.
Right, and like the reader at this point could still make a case for thinking it actually was Winky who did it. So I think it's good to have more than one suspect. But
do you think Winky would sound like though if she shouted that curse?
Moe's Mordra.
That's how you would say it in Dobby's voice too.
No, well, she says that she has a higher pitched voice than Dobby. Yeah, Dobby'd be like, "Moe's Mordra, sir." Harry Potter, sir. Moe's Mordra.
So try Winky again.
"Moe's Mordra, sir." I isn't saying it, sir.
So dumb.
Yeah, it's pretty dumb. Ron has the first reaction to the Dark Mark. It says, he says, "What the?" And Harry and Hermione are kind of just like breathless at seeing it. They have no idea what's going on. Hermione knows what it is. Harry doesn't even know what it represents or anything.
Harry says, "What's the matter?"
Yeah. He's just like, "Who's there?" He asks again. don't poke.
And Hermione's the one who immediately can make the connection this time.
Don't poke the beast, Harry.
Harry, what's the matter?
Who's there?
Where's the cannon?
Yeah. Where's the cannon? Yeah, it says Harry's startled to see Hermione's face so white and terrified.
Yeah, and then this is another scene where Harry is not so quick on the uptake. It's the Dark Mark, Harry. You know whose sign. And he says, "Voldemort's?"
They're like, "Harry, come on!"
They're like, "Harry, yeah, that's what we mean by you know who. That's what everyone always calls him."
That's
so, yeah.
You know who always means.
So dumb.
Anytime anybody says you know who, they are talking about Voldemort. But Harry always has to be like, "No, I don't know who. Are you talking about Voldemort?"
He literally every time, like, every time he wants to say Voldemort.
I know.
He, like, kind of like, it's not just that he's not afraid of the word, no. He, like, loves it. He loves it. He, like, gets a rush out of saying the name.
He, like, hates people to say you-know-who because he likes it because then he can confirm, do you mean Voldemort?
He gets a chance to say the name.
Exactly. So then they try to get out of there, but then these ministry wizards come and they all yell stupefy. Harry is quick on the uptake here because it says, in an instant, he registered one fact. Each of these wizards had his wand out, and every wand was pointing right at himself, Ron, and Hermione. Without pausing to think, he yelled, "Duck!" So then, that is smart that he does that.
he's much quicker on his feet during like a duel than he is during certain certain other scenes.
Well, also I forgot to mention Ron did get to scoop up his miniature crumb, don't worry.
Oh, good thing.
I think that the like Ron loves crumb plot is a little bit overdone in these early chapters. Like, we get hit over the head with the fact that Ron is obsessed with Crumb, just to make it even more dramatic when he turns on Hermione for going to the ball with Crumb. But anyway, so they miss the stupefy or the stunning spells don't hit them, even though there are 20 spells being hit at them. They hit the hairs on Harry's head, but not him.
Right, luckily. Yeah. You'd think that once he shouted duck, then everyone would just point their wand a little lower.
Right. That's a good point. But then Mr. Weasley yells, "Stop! Stop! That's my son!"
"Not my son, you!"
Yeah, exactly. So then Mr. Weasley comes and he's like, he's pretty shaken. He's like, "Are you all right?" And then Mr. Crouch is like, "Out of the way."
Here's Mr. Crouch, like, being a totally insane, he and Amos Diggory are both insane in this scene, like,
truly insane,
like, so, both of them, and Mr. Crouch, though, he's like, "Which of you conjured the dark mark?"
Yeah.
And Harry's like, "Wait, are you talking about Voldemort's sign?"
He's like, "No." He's like, "Voldemort?"
No, and then Ron's like, "We didn't do anything. What do you want to attack us for?" And Mr. Crouch goes, "Do not lie, sir."
"Do not lie, sir."
It's like, this is a 14-year-old.
Yeah. "You have been discovered at the scene of the crime." They are all 14 and, like, clearly don't know what's going on. Ron's question of, "What did you want to attack us for?" is like, so revealing of how young and, like, innocent in this crime they are. So then luckily it seems like Mr. Crouch is the only one who's actually suspicious of the three of them. It says none of the Ministry wizards apart from Mr. Crouch seem to think it remotely likely that Harry, Ron, or Hermione had conjured the skull. But Mr. Crouch is like, as soon as Hermione says that they heard somebody yell an incantation, he goes, "Oh, stood over there, did they? Said an incantation, did they? You seem very well informed about how that mark is summoned, Missy." Okay, dude.
Like,
down.
How else would you summon that besides, like, it seems pretty standard that you would cast a spell.
Right.
I don't know. I wonder why he goes so nuts. Like, it's got to be that he knows his son is missing. Like, he's already got I'm to sure. know that his son did this, right?
I think so. I mean, especially because he immediately, like, as soon as they find Winky, he immediately goes in the bushes and clearly finds his son. I think he either, maybe he doesn't know for sure that Barty Crouch Jr. escaped, but he knows for sure that there is a very good chance that his son had something to do with this.
Yeah, so I think he's looking for a scapegoat just to have the case closed.
Exactly. Yeah. So then they realize that the stunners went right through the trees, so it's a good chance that they got whoever summoned the dark mark. So Mr. Diggory goes into the woods and looks around, and then he finds Winky.
You'd think that if the curse hit Winky, how low did Harry and Ron and Hermione all duck?
That's a good point. It does say that Harry grabs their heads and pulls them to the ground.
So they, like, are lying on the ground?
Apparently.
And okay, that would make a little bit more sense.
If they're lying on the ground, then maybe, like, that, and then the curses ripple his hair, then they definitely would hit Winky. But yeah, I mean, just ducking isn't really the same as, like, falling, like, stop, drop, and roll.
But you'd think that Barty Crouch Jr. and Winky would have listened to Harry's advice as well.
Yeah, you'd think, but I guess they were too slow on the uptake or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Mr. Diggory emerges with Winky, and then Mr. Crouch immediately goes back into the woods where Mr. Diggory found Winky. I think, actually, because of his reaction here, he goes, "This cannot be. No." like, he's clearly, like, very triggered by this, and, like, I don't know. I don't think I don't think he realized that Barty Crouch Jr. was missing yet, or...
Yeah, maybe not. So, because he is very, like, shocked when he sees
Right.
Winky.
Like, I think maybe in the back of his head, he kind of was thinking there was a possibility, but I also think that he shows all the signs of shock here. Like, not just like his worst suspicions have been confirmed. It's actually shock.
I think so too.
So maybe he's just acting like an insane person to kind of characterize exactly how much he hates the dark arts, which is really such an important part of his character.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, he definitely kind of goes above and beyond with showing how much he hates the dark arts.
Right, that's true. Yeah, so Crouch goes back into the woods and they can hear him moving around, the rustling of leaves as he pushed the bushes aside, searching, which is, of course, we know now that he does pull the invisibility cloak off of Barty Crouch Jr. and he discovers that he's there. And then he puts the invisibility cloak back on over him, because he wants to take care of it himself. So yeah, then while he's doing that, Amos and Mr. Weasley are kind of having this discussion. Mr. Diggory immediately believes that Winky is the one who conjured it, and Mr. Weasley's like, that can't be. Like, it's a wizard sign. It requires a wand. And then Mr. Diggory reveals, yes, Winky did indeed have a wand in her hand.
Right. And do you think did she grab the wand from Barty Crouch Jr.? Like, how did she get the wand
That's what
back?
I'm thinking, is that like he conjured it and she was like, no, Master Barty, and like grabbed it from her
Yeah.
or from him, or else it's also possible that as soon as he did it, he put it in her hand because he knew that like it was possible that she could be caught for it, and he had an
Right.
invisibility cloak, so I don't know. It is weird that she picked it up.
Yeah, that could be true.
Yeah, as Mr. Diggory says, that's clause 3 of the Code of Wand Use broken. No non-human creature is permitted to carry or use a wand.
Yeah, and I had actually almost forgotten about Mr. Diggory's role in this whole interrogation. And so in the last when we first met Mr. Diggory in the Portkey chapter, I hadn't really focused that much on the fact that they say his title and that he's like the head of the non-magical, or I mean, no. I can't even remember what his exact title is. Do you remember it?
Yeah, he is the he's a member of the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures.
Right. So he's kind of like it makes more sense why he steps up in this position because it does involve a magical creature. So I guess that was a pretty important detail that we got earlier on.
Right, but he is like super power hungry in this scene. First, we should mention Ludo Bagman shows up and he's like, "What's going on?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "Why weren't you at the match, Barty?" So then he's like, "No, Winky couldn't have conjured the dark mark. She'd need a wand for a start." And then they find that she had one. So then Mr. Diggory enervates Winky, and she comes to life and starts being interrogated by Mr. Diggory. And this scene is pretty pathetic.
It's really sad. And like I was saying with Mr. Diggory, like, I just feel like he's, why is he, like, he's definitely in this job for the wrong reasons. Like, he
I
does
think
not
so
seem to,
too.
like, he does not seem to have any respect for, like, other magical
No,
creatures.
it's not like Mr. Weasley, who works for the Muggle, whatever it's called, because of his love of muggles. It's kind of what you might expect somebody in Mr. Weasley's job would feel, which is that they want to control muggles, which is the opposite. It's the opposite of Mr. Weasley. And I think that that's kind of the way that Mr. Diggory feels about the people in his job. Because he works for this committee, he feels like he can tell all magical creatures how they should live their lives, and that kind of thing.
It makes you wonder if he was also a Hufflepuff like Cedric, because it does not seem like a very Hufflepuff way of going about it.
No, it doesn't. And
I mean,
actually,
as much as we get accused of not of being Hufflepuff haters, which is far from the truth, because I just do
no.
not think that a Hufflepuff would be like this confrontational or like cruel
Or
almost
power
to.
hungry either. I mean, it definitely, he
Yeah.
seems like he's really on a power trip here, because
Like, to me, he would either be a Gryffindor or a Slytherin.
yeah, because he's really hot-headed, which would make you think maybe Gryffindor, but he also is very like drunk with power in this scene, which makes you think Slytherin. But I don't know. I mean, I definitely don't think Hufflepuff seems like his house.
No, but I guess I don't think we know that.
No, we don't. I mean, unless somebody has done that on Pottermore or something, but I just don't. It doesn't fit. And I mean, Cursed Child spoiler ahead. Don't listen or skip ahead 30 seconds. But yeah, I mean, this is kind of in keeping with the Cedric that we see in Cursed Child, who becomes a Death Eater when he survives, which I don't understand at all. I don't think that any Hufflepuff ever would become a Death Eater. But I don't know what that is exactly.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, so this interrogation, like I said, is really pathetic. Winky is like, I is not doing it, sir. I is not knowing how. And Mr. Diggory's like, you were found with a wand in your hand. And then Harry's like, oh, that's my wand.
Yeah.
And then Harry's like, I dropped it. And then Mr. Diggory's like, is this a confession? You threw it aside after conjuring the mark?
It's just, like, I just don't even understand, like, why they would just all, like, they just throw out all critical thinking to the wind. Like,
truly.
She was in the wrong place at the wrong time. It's simple as that. I mean, okay, it's not, because there's Barty Crouch Jr. involved, but, like, right. Clearly the house elf didn't do it.
Right, Mr. Weasley comes up with the most logical solution, or it's not solution, the most logical explanation, which is that somebody conjured the dark mark, threw the wand down, disapparated, Winky came along, picked it up, and then was stunned. And that's basically, it's close to the truth, and it's a very logical conclusion to draw from what the evidence that we have. Mm-hmm. But still, Mr. Diggory is just asking so many questions. Harry says that he's been missing the wand for, he says he missed it right after they got into the wood, even though he had been missing it longer. He just doesn't know.
Yeah.
And then Mr. Diggory, of course, is like, oh, so you found this wand, elf. And then Hermione finally stands up, and she's nervous, but she really wants to stand up for what's right. She says, Winky's got a squeaky little voice, and the voice we heard doing the incantation was much deeper.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Harry and Ron.
Harry and Ron back her up, which right. is good.
Yes, definitely.
But it's kind of an awkward... I feel like Mr. Crouch in this scene comes across as a total hypocrite, because he's like... First of all, he was the one who was like super accusing the kids right at the beginning of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says to Amos, like, you have come very close to accusing the two people in this clearing who are least likely to conjure that mark. Harry Potter and myself.
Right, because he's saying, like, because he's accusing Winky, he's accusing Mr. Crouch because Winky's his servant.
Yeah, he says, are you suggesting that I routinely teach my servants how to conjure the dark mark?
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, but yeah.
So, yeah, he definitely is hypocritical, because it actually kind of seems like he's defending Winky. This is after, just going back a teeny bit, they do Priori Incantatum, and they do find out that this is the same wand that was used to conjure the dark mark. And this is important, of course, because it's the first time we've seen the use of Priori Incantato, and it is going to be important later on when that's what saves Harry's life in the duel. But just going back again to the Mr. Crouch discussion, I think he is very, like, there's a lot of things about this that are kind of frustrating, because first of all, it seems like he's defending Winky by saying that, like, there's no way that somebody who's associated with me could be doing this, which of course is hypocritical, because of course it is his son who does it, but of course I think he's being ultra defensive because he knows that it is somebody who's associated with him who did it. So it seems like he's like, it can't have been my elf because, you know, because of who I am. But then immediately he's like, well, I'm going to deal with her. I'm definitely going to fire her. She, like, even though he basically admits that he doesn't think she did it.
Yeah.
I know.
It's so weird. He's acting like he's firing her just for disobeying orders, which is just so extreme. And poor Winky, she's just such a wreck. It says she's trembling worse than ever.
Right.
Her eyes were flicking around, and, like, she can't concentrate. She's just like, oh, poor little creature.
I know. Every time she speaks, like, her eyes were rolling with terror. She's like fraying the hem of her tea towel. Her tears are streaming down the sides of her squashed bulbous nose. I mean, she just seems so sad. And I mean, knowing that she's going to be fired is, of course, the worst thing that could happen to her in her mind. So she's mm-hmm. very, very upset.
Yeah, Mr. Crouch is just, like, zero pity. Like, I mean, he has no mercy in him whatsoever.
Truly, he's so cold. Says there was no pity in his gaze.
Yeah, and he says, like, he's just like, I have no use for a house elf who disobeys me.
Right.
I have no use for a servant who forgives, or who forgets what is due to her master and to her master's reputation. Like, shut up about your reputation.
Seriously. He's so obsessed with that. And, I understand.
The worst.
I guess I understand, like, he does, his reputation was threatened a while back, but still, it's really frustrating. And I think that, do we know what house Crouch was in?
I don't think we know. I could see for him either Ravenclaw, maybe.
Yeah, I think Ravenclaw.
Or maybe Slytherin, but I don't think he was in Slytherin.
No, I don't think he was in Slytherin. I think Ravenclaw.
Or maybe Gryffindor.
It's possible Gryffindor, but I think Ravenclaw because he's so obsessed with, like, doing things a certain way. Like, his own.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, so Hermione sticks up for Winky once again. She's like, your elf is scared of heights and those wizards in masks were levitating people. You can't blame her for wanting to get out of their way. And then he says this thing about having no use for a servant who forgets the master's reputation and stuff. Mr. Weasley basically says it's time to go because he don't think he wants Hermione to poke the beast anymore, the beast being Mr. Crouch.
Right. It's not... like, I don't know. It's not a good scene for children.
No, it's not. So he takes them away. They go back to the camp. And as they're going, Hermione gets in this big rant about elf rights, which is true. I mean, she points out Mr. Diggory called her elf the whole time, which was super annoying to read. He's just like, what'd you do, elf? Like, and she says, it was like she wasn't even human. And then Ron, of course, says, well, she's not.
I know, and this is where I'm saying, like, Ron has his dual, like, he has, like, certain aspects where he's very, like, social justice oriented, but then he has his aspects where he's totally blinded to them, so,
yes.
I mean, yeah, she's not human, but, like, she's definitely, like, I mean, able to think for herself. I mean, she has, like, a brain and,
right.
like, feelings, and she's not, I mean, Hermione has a good point. She says it doesn't mean she hasn't got feelings, Ron.
Right. So that's foreshadowing for later on, of course. And Mr. Weasley says that he agrees with Hermione, but now is not the time to talk about it. So then they go back to the tent and everybody's talking. Well, first they come across a bunch of other witches and wizards who know Mr. Weasley and they're asking what's happening. This is going to be, Rita Skeeter is among them, even though we don't know that yet.
Yes, which is funny, I guess.
Or maybe she's actually just there as a beetle. We don't know, but
right.
In the next chapter, he's going to be quoted by saying that they don't know who did it or that everything's okay, basically.
Right.
Or he didn't want to... I don't remember exactly what the quote is, but it's something like, I don't want to comment. But... And he's not credited with the quote. But anyway... They get back to the tent, and their tents were not harmed, which is good. Luckily, all the rest of the Weasley siblings are there. It says Bill had a large, or he's holding a bedsheet to his arm, which is bleeding profusely. Charlie has a rip in his shirt, and Percy's sporting a bloody nose. But then Fred, George, and Ginny are all there, even though they look scared. They're fine. So luckily, nobody got hurt, like, seriously.
Right. Their reactions to what happened are pretty interesting. I think, like, you can see, like, who cares about what. So Bill's like, did you get the person who conjured the mark? And then, Mr. Weasley says that they found Barty Crouch's elf holding Harry's wand. And, Fred reacts with Harry's wand and Percy reacts with Mr. Crouch's elf. Sounds thunderstruck.
Thunderstruck, yes. Which prompts this argument with Percy and Hermione, which is a really unique one because they've never had an argument before. It says Hermione had always got on fairly well with Percy, better than any of the others. But they have this really heated moment where they're arguing about whether or not Winky was in the blame at all.
And I think, I mean, this is an extremely important argument between the two of them because it shows the two paths that they're going to go down. Like,
yes, exactly.
Percy is defending Mr. Crouch and saying, like, well, he definitely should have fired her because she was, like, you know, she disgraced him in front of the entire ministry. And you know, how would that have looked for him? And Hermione's like 100% on Winky's side. Like, she didn't do anything. She was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it just shows us like Hermione's values and Percy's values.
Exactly.
And it's like they're about to both go on very different journeys in this book.
Right. Even though they've had similarities through the first three books, they've often been the two know-it-alls and the two sticklers for the rules and obsessed with punishment or like avoiding punishment and that kind of thing. This is where they kind of begin to diverge from each other.
Right. We see Percy cares a lot more about like rules for rules' sake, and Hermione cares more about like morality and ethics.
Exactly.
So it's obviously Hermione is the character that we'd want to strive to be like.
Definitely. So then we have this discussion of what the Dark Mark is. Mr. Weasley kind of paints a picture of exactly how terror-inspiring it is. He says, picture coming home and finding the Dark Mark hovering it over your house and knowing what you're about to find inside. Pretty dark
really
stuff.
Which is really scary. Yeah.
And then Bill points out that it actually scared the Death Eaters away tonight. They all disapparated and they caught the Robertses before they hit the ground. They're fine. And the Death Eaters are gone now. And then this is, of course, Harry's like, what are Death Eaters?
Yeah. So they go ahead and explain what Death Eaters are. So this is our first time we learn about the Dark Mark and the Death Eaters. So, I mean, it's setting the tone for the book that it's going to be much darker.
Yeah, it is. And just because Bill says, I think we saw what's left of them tonight, the ones who managed to keep themselves out of Azkaban. And then this is when we have this moment where later on they say, if they really were Death Eaters, then they wouldn't want to actually see You-Know-Who again or Voldemort again, mm-hmm. because they're the ones who managed to stay out of Azkaban, meaning that they kind of distanced themselves from that, lied about it, maybe betrayed others, and things like that. So
yeah,
he makes a good point that all these ones who are currently in Wizarding Society actually are the ones that probably don't even want Voldemort to come back that much.
Right. And I think, I mean, that's definitely true. Like, they are all pretty terrified when he does return to power.
Right.
And
it's also good foreshadowing to know that actually the wizard who does help Voldemort return is somebody who did break out of Azkaban.
Right.
It's not one of the ones who betrayed the other Death Eaters or pretended that they never were on Voldemort's side, that kind of thing.
Right, which is why I think Voldemort always calls Barty Crouch Jr. like his only loyal servant.
Right, exactly. And then also Harry, I forgot to mention, Harry asks why the Death Eaters were doing that and why they were levitating muggles. And Mr. Weasley says that that's their idea of fun. It's very, very sick, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's totally twisted.
Yeah. So then Hermione asks the question of whoever conjured the Dark Mark, were they doing it to show support for the Death Eaters or to scare them away? Which is a very good question.
Right, and knowing what we know now, I don't think it was to show support for the Death Eaters.
No.
I think it was to, I think maybe he was trying to, like, rally them or...
Right, well, actually, I'm pretty sure
just show his superiority.
I think he does say that it's something like, more like the second thing that you said, it's something like he wants them to see, like, you're doing this now, this is nothing compared to what Voldemort could be doing if he returned. Like, this is who you should be working for. Like, you betrayed this person. Like, he does it to show them, like...
Kind of put them in their place.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Maybe not to scare them, I don't think. Like, not to scare them off. I think maybe in some ways he was kind of, like, possibly trying to rally them, but also at the same time trying to say, like, if you want to be, like, if you want to do anything, like, you need to, like, commit.
So, yeah, I actually did, I did find the passage of when he's explaining this with the Veritaserum at the very end of the book. He says, we heard the Death Eaters, the ones who had never been to Azkaban, the ones who had never suffered for my master. They had turned their backs on him. They were not enslaved as I was. They were free to seek him, but they did not. They were merely making sport of muggles. The sound of their voices awoke me. My mind was clearer than it had been in years. I was angry. I had the wand. I wanted to attack them for their disloyalty to my master. I wanted to show these Death Eaters what loyalty to the Dark Lord meant and to punish them for their lack of it. I used the stolen wand to cast the Dark Mark into the sky.
Right. Yeah, kind of makes sense.
Yeah. It's... that Veritaserum scene, it's such an intense one because he's like... you know, he's under the truth potion, so he's just like saying everything and so creepy. But yeah, mm-hmm. that he's so twisted.
He is. He's really like his brain has been addled, I think.
Oh, seriously. And partially just for growing up under Mr. Crouch's parenting.
Yes. Yeah. Not that I feel sorry for him, but you can see a little bit of why he turned out the way he did.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, this is the end of the chapter, basically. Harry's going to bed, and he's thinking about how a few days ago he woke with his scar burning, and for the first time in 13 years, Voldemort's mark had appeared in the sky, and he's wondering what these things mean. He's not feeling at peace in the world the way he was a couple nights ago.
No, not at all.
So then it says, it was a long time after Charlie's snores filled the tent that Harry finally dozed off. I guess when you have such a broad face, it's hard not to snore.
Yeah, he's probably smiling as he sleeps.
I don't think
he's good natured.
I don't think he's that good natured tonight after all of the horrors that have gone on, but maybe.
Yeah.
Well, we've reached the end of the chapter, Alice. I think we agree it's a very, very good one. Is it the best we've read so far? Is it as good as The Riddle House?
I would be, like, open to putting it above The Riddle House, but I'd also be okay with putting it in second.
I know. I can't decide.
I like it more in some ways just because we do get to have Ron, Harry, and Hermione there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really, really good chapter, and I'm kind of inclined to actually put it at number one. It's so much better than the Quidditch World Cup chapter was, which is what we have at number two right now. I mean, not that I really enjoyed that previous chapter, but this is just so much better in terms of the content and the tone and everything.
And I just think it's so interesting with, like, Mr. Crouch and Winky and Mr. Diggory, too. I mean, I don't think we fully talked about what a maniac he was.
No.
But, I mean, it's just very interesting to see kind of the characterization of all these characters and, like, seeing sort of evil characteristics in characters that aren't Death Eaters, you know?
Yeah, totally. I actually kind of think it should be number one.
Yeah, I would be good with that just because, like I said, I think it plays more into, like, the actual book. Like, the Riddle House reads almost more like a fairy tale.
Yeah, or, like, a prologue.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I'd put it at number one.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, well, as far as Real Weirdo goes, though, what are you thinking?
I don't know, because I feel like the characters we saw were either, like, evil or, like, nothing special.
Right. I mean, like, the main characters we have are just Harry, Ron, and Hermione, and then Mr. Crouch and Mr. Diggory and Winky. I don't think Winky did enough to get the Real Weirdo. I think she's just too pathetic.
It would
in the
be
chapter.
Like a pity Real Weirdo.
Exactly. And then we already gave it to Mr. Diggory and Mr. Crouch. I don't want to, like, reward him for this behavior, but at the same time, I feel like this is his breakout chapter, right?
Yeah, I don't think that's the kind of thing we give this out for, though.
Well, we define the Real Weirdo as the breakout moment for somebody, right?
Yeah, maybe we could give it to Ludo Bagman.
He was very
for acting
there.
Like a total, like, but he was kind of funny because he was just being, like, so, I don't know, like, shady.
Yeah, and, like, no idea what's going on, it seems like. I mean, I guess we could also give it to Hermione for being standing up for elf rights, but it seems kind of like a cop-out.
I guess Hermione did enough that I feel like she could earn it. Or we could give it to Madame Maxime for seeking cover.
Yeah. Great idea. I guess I feel
like to Ron for playing with his Victor Crumb statue. Yeah.
I'd rather give it to Crouch than Bagman, but I guess I'd be okay with giving it to Hermione over both of them.
I think Hermione for holding her ground, standing up to the people from the ministry, and
she
then
is
also
really
like
good in this chapter.
Arguing it with Percy was cool too.
Yeah, that's true. Let's give it to her. I mean, I don't want to reward Mr. Crouch, but at the same time, you know, we have given the Real Weirdo to people we don't like in the past.
Yeah, I just think like when it's like truly despicable behavior, we don't usually.
Yes, that's true. So let's give it to Hermione instead.
Okay.
So you can find those lists on our website, realweirdsisters.com. You can also find our Patreon website on our website or go to patreon.com/realweirdsisters. That, again, if people are unfamiliar with it, is the place where you can go to support our show. We do pay quite a bit of money just to make sure that the show can continue to be as good as it is, or, you know, as okay as it is, as weird as it is. So we've started that Patreon page to make sure that we can continue to make the make sure that the show stays stable and continues to grow throughout the rest of these books. And there's lots of different levels you can support at with different rewards. We've been having a ton of fun with getting to know our patrons in the Facebook group and things like that. So if you're interested in that, that's the website, patreon.com/realweirdsisters. Another great thing you can do to support us is, of course, to subscribe, rate, and review us in iTunes. That helps us move up the charts in iTunes, which is really important to help us get new listeners and help us to grow our audience as well. And just to make sure that, or to help more people get the word out in terms of hearing about the show. And we do like to read a 5-star review of, on the podcast every week. And this one that I have today is from a listener named Elves of Three. The title is Sisters Doing It Together. This person says, I began reading the Harry Potter series to my daughter when the series first came out until she was old enough to read them herself. We were lucky enough to experience the books and movies as they were released and attended every midnight book release at our local bookstore. Later, listening to Harry Potter during long car rides became a family tradition. We still love Harry Potter, and it is a special bond I have with my daughter, who is now 26. I discovered this podcast by accident and have been binge listening ever since. I couldn't wait to share it with my daughter, and we listened to your readings of book 2 on a trip together recently. She's now a fan and has begun sharing it with her friends. I love the deep knowledge you have of the books and all the infectious laughter. As Martha would say, you guys are adorable. The sisterly banter is fun, and I have learned new things about the series. Your podcast is fresh, fun, and unique. That's a really nice review. I love hearing about your own experience with the books, and I also love that you're listening to that with your daughter, or you did listen to it with your daughter. It's great to think about this being something that people can enjoy together and something that can help people bond as well, reliving the Harry Potter series. I just think that's a really awesome review, and I really enjoyed getting that one.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really liked that as well.
Yeah, and of course, I also love that her daughter has shared the podcast with her friends, because that's another great thing you can do to help our show, is let your friends know. I'm sure if you are a Harry Potter fan and you're listening to this podcast, you have at least one friend who's a Harry Potter fan as well. You probably also have friends like me who don't even know that the third movie is the least scary, but you probably have a friend who might be interested in our show, and we'd love it if you would share the show with them, because it's great to have more listeners and more people in the Real Weird Sisters community. Speaking of the Real Weird Sisters community, you can also like our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/realweirdsisters, and follow us on Twitter at Real Weird Sister. So those are all great ways to help join the conversation and help us continue to grow the show. So thank you so much for everything that that you've done, if you've done all of those things.
Yeah, definitely. We really appreciate it. We couldn't do it without our listeners, and we love getting to know you guys. So make sure to reach out to us if you haven't already.
Yes. And again, thank you so much for listening to this episode. We will be back next week to talk about Mayhem at the Ministry. We've got 2 more chapters before we actually get to Hogwarts. We've got this one, and then we have Aboard the Hogwarts Express, and then we will finally be at Hogwarts. Long time coming, but this was such a fun chapter. I had so much fun talking about it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so until next week, we're the Real Weird Sisters.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the Real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the Vickers. Will the Real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up. Please stand up.